With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Annabelle. I am so excited about this show today. We have the Owensboro, Kentucky Coffee Party chapter with us. I think we have a number of members kind of available for this conversation. I have invited Eric Wiseman and Roger Ingram and Paul Estep, three key sort of members of the chapter, to kind of help me conduct this very important show as we get to know the Owensboro chapter and really get a sense for what they've accomplished and have some lessons going forward about, you know, how we can apply coffee party ideas and goals, especially at the local level. And given that they're in Western Kentucky, kind of the battleground, political battleground in America, I think it's very important that we have a chance to get to know what they're doing. So thank you so much for joining us, Eric, Roger. I don't know who else is on the call right now, Paul. Can you just
Well, we also have Marianne Lahardy, and Paul Estep is just now dialing in.
I'm in.
Catherine,
are you in?
I can hear everybody.
Okay,
so why don't we start with introductions? Eric, I'm going to ask you to do that. Do you want to introduce yourself and then ask other people to introduce themselves?
Okay, yeah, this is Eric Wiseman. I'm involved with the Western Kentucky chapter of the Coffee Party. I have been involved for about a year, and I'm a neuropsychiatrist and a neurologist and a troublemaker.
Troublemaker, good. Okay.
And I'm Roger Ingram. I'm the one that actually founded the coffee party group here in Owensboro a year ago in April. I'm retired. I was the financial advisor for 20 years, and I'm from Oregon, and my wife is from Kentucky, so we settled here in Kentucky.
Okay.
Rhianne, do you want to
go? I'm Marianne Lahardy. I've been in Owensboro for 6 years now, and I have joined the coffee party to save my sanity. I'm enjoying it very much. I have been disabled since 92, so occupying my time as best I can, and this seems to be the best way.
Where are you from, Marianne?
I'm from Versailles, France.
She's our European connection.
Wonderful. Great.
We're very, very fortunate to have her.
Troublemaker number
next?
Two.
You want me to introduce myself?
Sure.
I'm Paul Estep. I'm from the local tea party here in Owensboro, and I've been participating in the coffee party about since it's founded, so I can facilitate communications between the two groups.
I'm hearing an echo on Paul's line. I don't know, maybe it's a matter of turning down the volume on your computer or something like that. I'm not sure.
No, the computer is completely down.
Okay.
There's just varying degrees of lag time depending upon who's got a Motorola and who's got an iPhone, I think.
Okay.
Is the echo better?
Yeah, no, it is. It is better.
Okay, and I'm Catherine Shelton. I'm the last one here, and I actually met you and the Kentucky chair at the national convention that you had at the Galt House in Louisville, and had heard about it through Facebook and through a couple of things, I think, on NPR, and wanted to get involved, and then the Kentucky chairperson at the time connected me with Roger here in Owensboro, and I started attending the meetings.
Wonderful. Well, I'm really thrilled that you guys have been able to do this for over a year, meeting once a week, right? Every Saturday morning, from what I understand, at a coffee shop.
Yeah, we
and Roger has told me that people seem to be addicted to the coffee party. So.
Yes, we are.
Hey, Roger, so do you want to talk about that a little bit? What has it been like for you to watch this evolve?
It's just unbelievable. I've lived in Owensboro for a little over 2 years now, relocating here from Oregon, and I didn't really know anybody. And actually what happened, I'll just be very brief about this, but I went to a Tea Party rally with my Obama T-shirt on. And my wife was afraid I would be shot, but they were very cordial, and there was no problem. But there were a few people there who approached me and said, wow, you know, we kind of believe the same way you do. So I said, well, I really want to start a coffee party group. And because I had heard about the National Coffee Party, and there was no group here in Owensboro. So that's where it all started. And we started that in April of 2010 and have been going ever since. And it grew slowly. There were times when there were only two or three of us at our meeting. And we really started out meeting every other Saturday. And then Eric came on board. And he said, well, how come we don't meet every week? And so I said, well, I'm willing to. Not necessarily that I can be there every Saturday, but anyway, so and it went from there, and we have now grown to something around 30 members. Now, that is almost too many. If they all came every week, we'd have to break up into smaller groups. But we normally have, like this morning, we had nine people there. We usually have around 12 to 15. Some of our members are out of town this weekend. But anyway, I am absolutely addicted to it, and quite a few of us are. We almost feel like expatriates here in Owensboro, and it gives us a chance to come together with people who have similar views, although not all of it. We have quite a range of, well, like Paul, who's our representative from the Tea Party, so we get to hear the other side, I guess you might say. And then we have a couple of atheists. We have a fundamentalist Christian. We have Breanne for the European connection. And so it's a very diverse group.
I want to ask Eric, since being a doctor, being a neurologist, what makes the coffee party so addictive? I keep hearing that about this chapter. So what makes it so addictive for you?
Well, for our group, I think a big part of it is that many of us are interlopers. We're from somewhere else, and we don't fit into the homogenous culture that we have here in Western Kentucky. The recent additions to the party tend to be younger local people who have been disenfranchised. It's hard to get involved in the political end of things because there isn't much of a difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. From the viewpoint of, you know, somebody who's graduating from high school and entering college, those people just look at what's going on in the world and throw their hands up in the air, and they feel completely frustrated. If we can get them to come to a coffee party meeting, they get a sense of that they can do something. And what are you gesturing at, Marianne? Is it a cat? Let's see. I'm sorry. Can I ask, I want to do a little housekeeping thing here. If people are not talking, if we put our phones on mute, we'll have less feedback. We're getting just a little bit of feedback on the line. Do you know how to do the mute button on your phone? And then when we take turns talking, we come off mute. And that will work out a little bit better. I hope I answered your question. I don't want to get into the psychology of it, because we had a discussion of that this morning, and part of our discussion, there was not agreement about the why people belong and even what we should be doing as a group. We keep on coming back to this concept of, are we a think tank? Are we an extension of a national group? Are we supposed to be activists? Are we supposed to just sit around and talk about things? When we let things get out of hand, which has not happened in a while, right, Roger? When's the last time things got out of hand, the coffee party, when people got upset and walked out of the room? Yeah. So what we're doing now is working. It's just, we would like to see the thing grow at a slow pace with people who are getting a lot out of the experience and sticking with the program. I'm not really sure what the program is, though. What is the program, Roger? What are we doing?
Well, you know what? Let me ask Paul, actually, at this point. I don't know how long you've been coming to the meetings, but I know that you're a big part of that chapter. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is rewarding for you in coming to the meetings?
Well, the reason why I come is several reasons. For a personal reason, it's just to understand the terms and words that people use to explain themselves so I can better understand their ideas. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear me?
And what are things that where you feel like there are just serious disagreements, that where there's never really going to be an agreement, and maybe some agreements that you have sort of discovered along the way?
Well, I think one of the things we've agreed on is some of the local issues here. Here in Owensboro, the city commission gave a sweetheart deal to some individual here in Owensboro to build a hotel complex, and they're going to subsidize that hotel complex if that hotel doesn't meet a certain vacancy rate. And I think we could all agree that that is something that government shouldn't be doing, or the local government. So we can agree on that. I think we agree on the problems, but sometimes it's the solutions that divide us.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a general truth. we do have a caller. I'm not sure if this is another member or a question, so let me just take that. Hello there. Do you have a question for us? Hello? Maybe they're on mute. Okay, we'll come back to the caller. Tell me more about, some of the, and this is to anybody in this group, some of the things that you've learned in the past year in terms not only of, trying this kind of new approach, but also, maybe in reaching some common ground that I think many, many people in America are seeking right now.
Well,
anybody want to take that?
The grounds that I found out is that, and it's something that I believe you're trying to fight up there at the national level, is the corporate welfare that's built into our tax system.
Yes.
And I think if you look at the Tea Party, we've always been for a flat or fair tax or even a simplified tax code that took out a lot of the corporate welfare, all these giveaways to corporations. And it's something I think that we can agree with the coffee party, I believe.
Uh-huh.
We don't want to see all – we don't think taxpayer money ought to be going to bailouts. We don't think taxpayer money ought to be going to corporations.
So, I mean, why do you think it's so hard to make that part of the Republican agenda, dealing with corporate welfare?
Well, there's a lot of people in the Tea Party that are trying to change the Republican Party. For example, Rand Paul, our state senator, I'm sure he believes the same point that I just made to you, that we need a fair, flat, or a simplified tax system. And he's not for any of these corporate giveaways either. So we're trying to change of the Republican Party. We're trying to get that message out as citizen activists. So hopefully, eventually, we can change all the Republican Party.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really, you know, wonderful discovery. And at the national level, we have definitely found that that there is widespread agreement about that, even, you know, among conservatives and Tea Party members. But it still seems like there's a what keeps, I think, keeps us from making progress on some of that is the two-party system and a kind of general lack of trust among organizers. So even if we agree, it's hard to kind of come together to organize together, right? So I feel that that's kind of what my experience has been is, you know, it has to go beyond agreement to building trust, you know. What do you think about that?
I agree. Trust is a big issue here. And I think it works both ways. I know a lot of people, when I participate in your menu board, think that the Tea Party is just a tool of the corporations. Well, from our viewpoint, the Coffee Party is a tool for the corporations because you're advocating for more intrusive government or more regulations. To us, that just feeds into the big corporations. You're giving government the power, which the corporations will then control. So our idea is to limit the power in the federal government, push that power down to the states where I, as a citizen, activist, and individual, can participate more, can change the more strongly affect change at a local level rather than the change that I can affect at a federal level.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And so, but how about with the others? Like, what do you all think in terms of, you know, finding that common ground?
Well, this is Marianne. I heard what Paul said, and I agree with everything he said. But I have a problem with people of the Tea Party persuasion being so gung-ho about the government involved in people's private lives. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to have less government, let's have less government across the board. And whether a person is homosexual or a woman wants an abortion, it is none of the government's business. And you see, this is a place where we don't agree.
Mhm. Okay, that's a very good point. Yeah. So, what do you think about that, Paul? I mean, I think that.
Well, the Tea Party has three main issues here. That's fiscal conservatism, it's free markets, and limited government. Yes, the social conservative issues are swirling around because we're essentially conservatives, but that's to a certain extent that's off the table now. We're more concerned with The Tea Party is more concerned with the fiscal issues rather than the conservative issues, rather than the social conservative issues.
But do you think that there are a lot of Tea Party members who are social conservatives?
Yes. In fact, most of them are, I would assume.
And you? Are you?
To a certain extent, yeah. I fall in between maybe kind of the libertarian view, which takes a view that, you know, people are people, they just ought to be left alone, to a more Republican view, which says, there are some issues, some social issues that the government does need to get involved in.
Okay. Roger, what do you think? What do you think are some things where you see potential for, you know, common ground? Maybe Roger, we lost Roger, maybe? This is really for anybody else. Eric, you want to call someone?
Roger's here. I think he's on mute. Let me check his phone.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm look at it.
I'm unmuted now.
I'll tell you what, Roger's going to use my phone.
Okay, Roger, do you want to answer that?
Okay, I'll try to. What was the question again? I was trying to get my phone unmuted. And
Oh, the question was about what do you think, where do you see potential for common ground and working together on issues?
Well, I think that what we have to do is not take the big issue, but break it down into smaller segments to where we can find common ground. In other words, like, say, big government. That's pretty big slice. But if we can break it down into what is big government, what is small government, and then begin to find areas where we have agreement.
Okay. Good point. Anybody want to elaborate on that?
This is Catherine.
I'm looking for basically some of the things that you guys have discovered and learned through this process.
I'd like to get Catherine involved if she's outside here trying to get away from interference. So, Catherine, are you there?
Yes, sir. I feel that is one thing that I do enjoy about the coffee party, and that is where, you know, we all get together, we talk about issues, or we talk about current events, we talk about local things, we talk about state or national things, and through our discussions, we find common ground with things, and I think that's been, enjoyable, because there are so many, a diverse group of people who are meeting and experiences that they've had that it helps myself, you know, kind of form what my opinion is going to be, because I'm not knowledgeable or don't have the time to read up on everything, but everyone kind of gets their little area, their little niche that they're into, and they're kind of like the little information on that, you know, that they share with the others.
Mm-hmm. So have you guys actually decided to organize on any issues so far? I just heard from Paul about this hotel subsidy. Have you sort of gone from agreeing to something and then saying, let's do something about it and organize?
Yeah, I think we have. One of the issues that came up was recycling. And we talked about, it's a small issue, but it's an issue with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Something where we had one of our members get involved at the local community level, got a lot of abuse from one of the judges on the commission, was called a tree hugger and a liberal and all this stuff. But eventually the town acquiesced, and I was pleased to see the headline in the newspaper said that we're going to have recycling. I think we had an impact there. It's a small thing, but it was something that some of the members felt needed to be done, and that we could see whether or not we had any impact. We had a letter writing campaign and actually had people represent our viewpoints at a city commission meeting, and it worked.
Wow, that's encouraging. I mean, but in terms of sort of the takeaways from your past year so far, what do you advise to other organizers who, you know, want to be able to have that kind of inclusive dialogue, but also want to have political impact? Because that's the biggest challenge, really, right?
Well, I think the most important thing that this group did was decide to meet on a weekly basis. You have places like Pensacola that have 450 members, but they have trouble getting five people together for a meeting. That's probably because they don't meet as frequently as they should to make it feel like something that they belong to that's bigger than themselves. If you have something that's predictable at a particular time that becomes like bowling league or, going to church, you can actually belong to the coffee party rather than it be something that you dial into or access on the internet. It's a group of people. And we just got together twice this week. We had 4th of July parties at my place, and we had 90 people
between the two parties. And that wouldn't have happened if we didn't meet on a weekly basis. And in deference to Roger, we've had as many as 27 people at meetings in the last 6 months.
That's amazing.
Yes, we did have at one point, and that really is too many at one time because everybody's trying to talk and nobody can get a word in, and it's very hard for me as kind of the moderator to try to give everybody a chance. But I would like to say, as maybe advice to other groups that are trying to get going, we started out very small. At one point, I asked some of our members if they wanted to get involved in activism, and the consensus was that we weren't really big enough to affect any kind of change. We needed to grow our numbers. And that's what we've concentrated on over this past year, is getting a good, solid group. Now, we have three people who weren't there today because they were out of town. All three of those are very influential. For example, Dean West is our historian, and he is an expert on the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, and that's very helpful to us in understanding certain aspects. But we are now, I think, approaching the point where we have a solid enough membership that we can become activists to a certain degree. Now, having said that, not all of us are going to agree on a particular thing to be activist about.
Right.
And so we have to boil it down to something that, you know, there may be half a dozen of us that say, yes, we want to become more activist. We have one member, and unfortunately she's not able to join the call, but she
mm-hmm.
really wants to become more activist. And
mm-hmm.
We talked about it this morning, and I told her, I said, that's great. It's just that we may not, for example, Paul may not want to be activist about something that somebody else in the group does, but I don't think we all have to be on the same page.
Right.
And the thing that has actually made this work
mm-hmm.
is that we do have a diverse group of people that, and, you know, in the beginning, I had everybody sign a civility pledge
mm-hmm.
that they agreed to discuss things civilly. And that has been the case. Like Eric said, maybe a few months ago, we did have a rather heated discussion, which I had to try to bring under control. But for the most part, we do not have any problem. We can espouse different ideas and listen and
mm-hmm.
try to learn. I think that's the key thing. It's like Paul said, he is there to learn from us and take what he learns from us back to his Tea Party group, and
mm-hmm.
we learn from Paul so that we begin to see, okay, yeah, there are other sides. And for the most part, the people in the Coffee Party group here are progressives
mm-hmm.
and come from a progressive standpoint. But that doesn't mean that we can't learn from a more conservative viewpoint. In fact, over the next few weeks, I come with an agenda every week.
Mm-hmm.
But very seldom do I ever get to the agenda because the conversation just takes off. As soon as people get there, the conversation takes off. So I don't get a chance to – well, I mean, it's not that I don't get a chance. But I like to let it kind of grow organically. If I try to control it, then I think that would put people off. And
what are some of the great conversations you've had? What sort of subjects is it? Do you guys talk about the economy, for instance? Like, what are the popular subjects?
Well, one of the things that we talked about today is the debt ceiling and whether we think that's, I mean, not that we know, but that, you know, what are the consequences? In fact, last week I asked everybody that was there last week, what impact will it have on you personally if they don't raise the debt ceiling, if the government goes into default?
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, that was a conversation generator, let me tell you, because we all had different ideas about, you know, how it's going to affect us, as far as we know. I mean, we don't really know for sure how it's going to affect us. But anyway, that's something more on a national level.
Mm-hmm.
We get involved in a lot of things on smaller level, like local level type things. Sometimes the discussion centers around religion and spirituality. Sometimes it's around politics, and sometimes it's around just more local issues like the recycling thing, which I was very pleased that one of our members was actually able, we as a group did not go out and advocate for recycling, but she felt empowered because she knew that our group was behind her. And so she went forth and conquered, so to speak. And now we're going to have curbside recycling in Owensboro. So that was a real victory, which I'm really proud of.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's great. That's a great story. I mean, I think it's interesting that we're facing this kind of debt ceiling crisis, and there's a great Economist article that came out that this is a political crisis more than an economic crisis. And I do feel like that's kind of the spirit of the coffee party, is like we want to kind of take on the political crisis, you know, afflicting our country and not turn away from it and not continue to reinforce the political crisis and see what we can do as citizens to really, you know, handle, tackle this polarization and gridlock, right? So it's very encouraging to hear that you guys have made progress and found the experience really rewarding, right? Despite disagreements and how heated things can get, it seems that people feel that each individual involved, they feel respected as a person. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I would, and I'm sure everybody here would. One person that Marie Ann brings a European outlook to us. There, we have a gentleman who was born and raised in communist China, and we get a very different outlook from him, which is very, you know, really valuable to us because, you know, you kind of have a stereotype of communist China, but he brings a message of world peace. Now, I don't know if that's a communist China message, but everything that he talks about at our coffee party meetings involves world peace. Why can't we all just get along? Well, you know, that's a wonderful goal. I don't know that it's achievable, but at least it's good to hear somebody talk about it anyway. I'll be quiet now and let somebody else talk.
Well, Marianne, do you want to explain kind of your perspective, being from France?
I often have the discussion of trying to explain that we are not communists in Europe. And this is a very difficult concept for Americans to grab because they, you know, they conflate socialism and communism and don't seem to quite know the difference. And for me, it's laughable, but then, you know, I come from Europe, so I know more. And we have faced communists, you know, looking them straight in the eye as opposed to just hearing about them. So we know that they're just people like you and me. They just think differently. And it is not such a scary thing. And I try so hard to explain it. Socialism is not a bad thing. You have socialism here in your own country. You may not recognize it, but you have it. It's just like you have ID cards, but you keep saying, oh, no, we shall never have ID cards. You know what I mean? It's unrealistic.
Right. Yeah, I definitely see what you mean. I think that that kind of educational component is something that I think most Coffee Party members feel really passionately about, is not allowing people to just get away with pure rhetoric, but, you know, really seeing if we can go beyond the rhetoric to getting them to really spell out what they mean, and if that and if their rhetoric really matches up with reality, you know. So I think, you know, that's something I would be interested to hear more from Paul about is, you know, I'm assuming that's one of the reasons he's there as well, is that he wants to get kind of his truth out to a different audience. But, you know, it seems like there's a fundamental confusion about some of the concepts that we throw out in political discourse, popular political discourse, things like communism and socialism that that just trigger people. But I think we mean completely different things often. Like, we don't mean the same things when we use these words. So I'm curious to kind of hear from Paul. Like, I mean, do you agree with that? Do you feel like people kind of throw words around and we get all emotionally triggered, but we don't really have the, we don't operate with the same definitions?
Yes, definitely. I think that's why I attend the coffee party, is to find out, to learn what language they're talking about, so I can better explain my concepts in their language, and also to dispel the myths that are around the Tea Party. I figure,
right,
you know, if I'm there, I can tell them what we think and what is really happening at the local level.
Well, what are some myths that you would like to dispel about the Tea Party?
Well, it's basically what you always hear, that we're racist, that the latest one is that we're terrorists, and we're trying to are suicide bombers, because a lot of us do not want to see the debt limit raised unless there's cuts. So that's some of the myths that I would try to dispel.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's tackle the one about the debt ceiling. Do you agree that there shouldn't even be consideration of closing tax loopholes and addressing that? Addressing the revenue side of the debate?
Well, from my perspective, the compromise is that we agreed to raise the debt limit, and all we're asking for is spending cuts, which to me is a one-to-one deal. Now, as far as closing the corporate loopholes and all that, I personally would rather see that in another bill that would simplify the tax code.
But I mean, isn't it in everyone's interest to raise the debt ceiling so that we don't default?
From the right is that this August 2nd date is potentially just a scare tactic, and that's not only hearing that from Rand Paul and other Republicans, but it's also hearing that from Rick Santelli, who's a reports on CNBC. He's a bond trader. Reports on the bond market, and he's saying that the bond traders aren't concerned about the August 2nd date. In fact, he brought up a memo from Goldman Sachs, I believe what it was, which said that Goldman Sachs wasn't concerned about the August 2nd date and if the U.S. would default. So we hear that, and what we're hearing is that this August 2nd date is just kind of a scare tactic to us to try to force us to compromise. And really, it isn't a true date that the U.S. government would go into default.
Okay. And how about the charges of racism? Do you think that's completely unfair, or do you feel like you have seen some Tea Party members and rallies kind of go in that direction?
Well, I can only speak from the local perspective, And to a certain extent, from the state perspective, when we get together as a kind of the Tea Party groups under the Take Back Kentucky meeting, I see no racism. I think sometimes people define racism as if you don't believe in certain progressive views, such as affirmative action or the need to give a hand up to African Americans and other minorities. Well, from my viewpoint, that isn't a racist issue. Just because I don't believe in that doesn't make me a racist.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, I'm not saying that this is true, but I think the theory is that there were many people during and before 2008 election that America is not ready for a black president, and that when he did win the election and got inaugurated, that it kind of unleashed in a very dramatic way that part of our American society and history that can't deal with the demographic changes in our country. You know, so I think they saw the Tea Party, the explosion of the Tea Party coming into our political life as kind of part of that reaction to, you know, President Obama being African-American and from an immigrant father. So I think that's kind of the general kind of theory that people have about it.
And I understand that, but you have to understand that the Tea Party came into existence because of the bailouts, primarily because of the government seeming to prefer the corporations over the individual.
Right.
And that's really what set it off.
Mm-hmm. And you think that's still the real spine of the Tea Party, that the anger at the bailout? Do you still think that's true?
Most definitely. Yes, and I think that goes to the fact that we don't want to see any corporation getting taxpayer monies as far as these loopholes and the corporate jets or the tax breaks for the oil and gas companies. But we also don't think that the green energy companies ought to be getting the tax breaks either, or special deals, or the venture capitalists getting special deals for their green investments.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the issues that, you know, at the national level that we are very focused on is money in politics issue. I mean, is that something that you would be interested in working with us on?
Yes, but we have really different views on that.
Okay.
Our view is that the way you get money out of politics is you take the power out of the federal government. You push those decisions down to the local level, where the citizens can take control of their government. Me as an individual can greatly affect our local elections or our state elections. I ran for state representative here last election cycle, and it was easy enough for me to do. I did it on $1,000. I traveled around our two-county area, and I tried to affect change. And I think that I at least got some of my message out. I didn't win the election, but I at least got my message out. And I think that's how we get the corporations out, or the money out of politics. And, in fact, there's a conservative activist handbook called We Plead Guilty to Contempt of Congress, How to Take Back the USA. And in there, they talk about this idea of affecting change with a citizen's army, just individuals, not beholden to the corporations, that go and petition the state and organize on a local level to make changes. And to us, that's the power of changing government, is through the citizens.
Right.
But the Constitution isn't worth anything if citizens don't stand up for it. Our laws aren't worth anything if the citizens don't stand up for those laws. So it's the citizen and what he does that affects change, which is the most important part of a government. And we have to empower the individual, the citizen, in order to be able to do that.
Okay. How about, can I hear from other people? How do you respond to Paul?
Eric, why don't you go ahead? My head is spinning right now. I feel like walking over there and hitting him over the head with a polo mallet right now. But that wouldn't be civil. I don't understand this notion of thinning out our federal government. I mean, we've talked about why we have a federal government. I was quite surprised to learn that one of the main reasons why the Founding Fathers pushed the notion of having a federal government was to pay off our debts to France after the Revolutionary War. And I learned, the more I learn, the more I realize that there are things going on in government at this moment that everybody can be upset about. One of the problems with government is that our House of Representatives, once people walk in the door and then assume their posts as representatives, they almost immediately they're starting to work on financing their reelection because it's only a 2-year position. They're beholden to large chunks of money from corporations. And if they don't do what they're asked to do, then somebody else gets supported in the primary. If we could have campaign finance reform, then maybe our representatives would be doing a better job of representing everybody instead of just the 2% or 1% that run the show. And I think that the Tea Party folks could agree on that, except they have this this drive coming from corporate America. Now, I recognize the fact that the Tea Party is not one group of people. It's a collection of different groups of people, and that the Tea Party has been around for a while, certainly longer than the Coffee Party, as you know. But that what we see in effect with a chunk of the new Congress people coming in representing the viewpoints of the Tea Party, they're putting pressure on the Republican Party to behave in a certain way and to, you know, shrink the size of government, thin out the so-called entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. And the only people that are benefiting from all of this are the top 1 or 2%. And I don't think the average person who shows up for a Tea Party rally realizes to the extent that they're being driven by a handful of wealthy people and certain TV networks. But we talk about this, and we're civil. And I went to get my tires changed on my car. I was talking about this morning at our meeting. And I had to sit in the waiting room and listen to Fox News. And I found it quite unpalatable. When I go to the doctor's office, it's Fox News. When I go stand in line at a fast food restaurant, we get Fox News. We don't get any exposure to liberal, so-called liberal media, because it's banned. I mean, the county that I have my main office in, you can't even get MSNBC on the cable TV. It doesn't exist. It's not allowed. Even if you buy the premium package, it's not part of the deal. You cannot get MSNBC. So people are being told by Fox News, which is just about the only thing they watch around here, that everything else is the enemy. And they don't even have access to what they consider the enemy to be. You asked me about the psychology of all this. I could spend a month talking about the psychology of all this. We talk about this at neuropsych meetings and the strategies and methods that the corporations use through their corporate media to control the average people. My job, I see it, as a member of the Coffee Party, is to just not scare anybody off, not label the Coffee Party as the enemy to people that would crush us if they thought that we were the enemy, and to keep it going, at least locally, as a forum for discussion. I think what's going to end up happening is we're going to grow so big that eventually we're going to reveal ourselves as being a bunch of intelligent, caring individuals who don't want the top 1% running the show and taking everything away from the rest of us. And I'm hoping that Paul continues to attend our meetings and share some of these ideas with the rest of the people, and maybe they do as he does. I mean, Paul will tell you that he's been watching Rachel Maddow on TV, and she doesn't have horns and she doesn't have a tail, and some of that stuff is interesting. I would like to see the rest of the people who attend the Tea Party meetings be able to tune in to watch Ed Schultz or Rachel Maddow or listen to America Left and just listen to some of these progressive ideas instead of the characterization that's provided to them, spoon-fed by, Fox News, is it? Is that what they listen to? Fox News, yeah. And I think we would get our country back. I also think it's going to take a generation to do, though, because it is a big uphill battle.
Right. Well, thanks for that, mm-hmm. Eric. I mean, you know, I think, there's some people on hold right now, so I want to get to them. But, I mean, I did want to respond to Paul, slightly differently. I think the idea of people being involved at the local level, I mean, to me, that should be totally encouraged. And I agree that, you know, we have so much more impact at the local level. And there are many decisions that are being made at the county level, city level, that we don't even pay attention to. And I think that's not a good thing for our country. Having said that, I don't think we can deal with the money and politics issue by simply removing power from the federal government, because I think that corruption will follow wherever there's power. So, you know, at the state level, at the local level, as they gain more power, there's simply going to be corruption and people trying to influence and buy their influence. We're just, you know, just find a way to infiltrate that. So I don't ultimately think that's the answer, although I love the idea of, you know, think globally, act locally, paradigm that these local actions are really important, and we get too caught up in the theater and drama of stuff happening at the national and federal level when, you know, we pay a lot of taxes at the local level. In some ways I agree with what Paul's saying, but I don't think that's a solution for the corruption problem. Okay, so I'm going to see if the other people on hold have a question or comment. And so I'm going to open everyone up. Hi there. Do you guys have any comments or questions for us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, this is like first of all, I just had to respond to the three-party person, and I kind of found it interesting. And it can be summed in one question. How can you have more faith in somebody you do not elect to have more control over your life than people you elect every 2, 4, or 6 years? It simply doesn't make any sense. And that if that the Tea Party has been successful in promoting the idea that government is bad and the corporation has your better interest, behooves logical thinking. With that, I'll end right there and see what Mr. Tea Party has to say.
Yeah, Alberto, let me see if I understand the question. When you say how can you have trust in a person you haven't met or haven't elected, well, I'm not sure if I understand who you mean by that.
You mean who do I mean? Who to answer the question, or what do I mean by
no,
that?
No, the beginning of your question, you said, how can you trust someone?
In other words, right now, what's being promoted by most of, let's say, the right or the Tea Party or whatever, is that government is no good, government is intrusive, government is doing all these things. However,
okay.
The reality is, if we look at the corporate entity and see the influence that they actually have on our lives, it is a lot more active within our lives than government. The only difference is government, we have a choice as the people to elect them every 2, 4, or 6 years so we can get them out of there. With the corporations, we have zero control. And when it's a corporation, let's say like an oil company that sells gas, that is a commodity that we all depend on, we cannot even say, well, we'll not buy it anymore. Especially with antitrust laws not being held up, these guys can be conglomerated in such a manner that, you know, you don't have a choice but to buy from them. So there's no recourse. Government is the only recourse.
Okay, I got it. Okay, Paul, do you want to answer
that? I spoke up a lot, so I don't know if I really got the question. I did hear something about the antitrust laws, and I certainly agree with the antitrust laws. I think that's a good progressive idea, an idea that came out of the progressive movement that I think most of us would support. In fact, when I tried to mention that fact to a conservative book club, I said, hey, you know, these progressives aren't all that bad. Look at the antitrust laws. And they all agreed with them. And, of course, their comment was, well, that's supporting a free market. That's doing competition. Well, antitrust laws are, to a certain extent, against the libertarian view or whatever. I hope that answers the question. I didn't really hear it.
I think what he was driving at is, it seems like if we don't have a strong government, then we're leaving our fate up to corporate power.
Well, it's more of a belief that we can control the corporations through our state governments. And because it's easier for me as an individual, as a citizen activist, to participate in our state government, to bring up issues, to convince my neighbors that certain things are issues and they need to vote this way or vote this candidate in. In fact, there's a strong conservative activist movement here in Kentucky, and they've been doing this for 17 years. They have passed gun control rights here in Kentucky, so there's open carry, and been very involved in the state government, and they do not take any corporate tax dollars at all. You go to their meetings, they just pass around the hat and people donate it, and they've been very effective in our state government in changing the laws. So to me, from my perspective, is the state government is where we control the corporations. Because it's hard for citizen activists or an individual to affect that change at the federal level.
But it's difficult as it is right now to impact change really at the federal level on any issue. But that's the status quo. But I'm assuming that you're not saying that it should be that way, that we don't have that kind of power in our government right now. I mean, that just shouldn't be. We have to change it so that people have more control over our government.
And maybe in the future with the Internet, that would be a whole lot easier. However, just from a geographical perspective, it just takes me an hour to go down to the next county, to drive down there, talk to folks, talk to the Lions Club, talk to the Kiwanis Club, talk to groups, and try to convince them that this issue is what they need to be concerned about. This is an issue they need to bring up to their state representatives or state senators. It's easy for me to do it from a local level because, you know, I'm not rich. I can't afford to fly to Washington every week or every month to convince my parents. Or to even to fly around the U.S. to convince people. But I can drive around my local area and convince people that there's an issue here and this is the solution.
Okay. Well, you know what? We're actually running out of time, so I do need to wrap things up. But I would definitely love to continue this conversation with you and you know, all of you, but especially Paul, because I feel like I got a lot of insight into some of the differences that we may have. I will kind of for the next call we all have together, I would definitely like to talk about the reality of whether or not the state government can have control over multinational corporations that are such big parts of our lives right now. But anyway, that's for next time, and I just want to thank everyone, especially Roger and Eric and Paul, for making this happen, and to all the people from Owensboro Coffee Fire Chapter. Thank you so much. You guys are doing great work. It's really hopeful to hear about your success. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Annabelle. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you guys again very soon. Let's do part two.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.